Okay. Last week we learned Perek Chav Dalet of the Netzach Yisrael, which makes this week Perek Chav Hey. We didn't really finish Perek Chav Dalet properly, but I think we're going to go ahead anyway to Perek Chav Hey because there are a couple of nekudos in Perek Chav Dalet that I still wanted to stop on. To some degree, it's covered in Perek Chav Hey as well. To some degree, not everything, of course, but we can never cover everything. Yeah. Perek Chav Hey is, by the way, the concluding perek of the first chelek, the Hardman edition, and it does, to some degree, there's no clear break, in the normal edition, it goes from Perek Chav Hey to Perek Chav Vav, but there is a little bit of a shift from the discussion of Golos to the discussion of Geula a little bit in between the first way he divided up in the first volume and the second. Now, the theme of this perek is the theme of Achdus Yisrael, of the unity of the Jewish people. We're well established in the Sefer Netzach Yisrael is the significance of Achdus Yisrael, of the unity of the Jewish people, as a turning point between Golos and Geula. Really, from the very beginning, if you recall, the way the Maharal explained the words Gola versus Goal was Gola was with the letter He, and the letter He has the Dalid of the Arba Kanfes Oretz, the four corners of the earth, with the little yud of unification. The Jewish people, to some degree, remain unified despite their physical dispersion. Whereas Goal is where the hay is replaced with an aleph, where they literally come together. The Katzenu Yachad, Me Arba Kanfes Oretz. Right? Hu Yigalo Yisonu Bekoroi, Vikabesi Nachenu, Me Arba Kanfes Oretz, Chaverim Kol Yisrael, Venoimar Amen. And the Golos, which he's explained, and we even discussed last week, went over last week, has these three elements. One element of displacement, one element of subordination outside of Eretz Yisrael, one element of subordination, under other umais. And there's the third element of the dispersion, of the breaking up of the Bnei Yisrael from their unity as an umma, from their unity and their cohesion as a people. And that's really what this perek is dedicated to. This perek is dedicated to the importance and the emphasis of maintaining Achdus Yisrael, maintaining the unity amongst the Jewish people. Now you might say that, well, maintaining the unity about the Jewish people is not Golos. Golos is the dispersion, the separation, the break. But you understand that while to some degree part of the Gzeiras Golos is dispersion, that cast us about, and we have Jews in America, and we have Jews in Europe, and we have Jews in Africa, and we have Jews in Asia, and we have Jews all over the globe. Be'arba kanfes ha'oretz. However, there's still a semblance of unity that can exist, or that cannot exist. And while we have physical limitations, global limitations, but we still have tremendous possibilities and potential. And really, that's what this perek is about, to look at, to discover, and to try to see what we can do about this in terms of that aspect of the Golos. So the Maharal really makes a three-pronged point about the value of Achdus Yisrael, about the value of the unity of the Jewish people in terms of how we face it within the Golos. The first point which he makes is as follows. Something which is whole and which is complete is much less subject to hispilus, to being affected, to being the object to be affected and transformed by something else. When something is broken up and has no internal strength, internal togetherness, so then you're able to get them much better. What's the expression which is classically used? divide and conquer. Exactly right. Divide and conquer. When they're together, they're very, very hard to overcome. They're very hard to suppress. They're very hard to conquer. Divide them, and they lose their own internal unity, their own internal system, and it becomes much easier to conquer them, much easier to take them over. So, a big part of Golus, of course, is, our need in Golus is to survive the Golus. Hashem was gozer on us, the Golus, whatever conditions that it has, but we need to have the mechanisms to be able to survive the Golus. The more Klal Yisrael keeps themselves together, the more we achieve some level of internal shleimus, the less subject we are to being affected and transformed by other nations, by the nations amongst whom we live. So therefore, that's notion number one. And in this, the Maharal brings Chazal, famous statement of Chazal, where they speak about Godol HaSholem V'Sonei HaMachlaikas. Sholem, peace, is a great thing. Machlaikas is a despised thing. And the Gemara brings, the Chazal bring famous thing about this, that they say, you see, that Afilu, by Godol HaSholem, Afilu Aydim Avedah Zarah, Kedar Enayish, even if they serve Avedah Zarah, still, Ena Satan Egeabahem. The Satan doesn't touch them. However, without Sholem, Mishenechleku, so we say, Cholak Liba Mata Yeshamu. With Machlaikas, we could be vulnerable, even if we have a lot of other things spiritually that are in place. Everybody remembers the famous Rashi in Chumash, where Rashi explains that the Dor HaMabul seemed to be less of an affront than the Dor HaFloga. The HaFloga was a frontal assault on HaKadosh Baruch Hu. They wanted to make a tower reaching to the heavens, waging war against the heavens. But nevertheless, the punishment was much less because Godol HaSholem V'Sonei HaMachlaikas. And the way the Maharal explains it is that when the language of Chazal, specifically in the Sifrei, is that the Satan has no ability to touch them when they are together. And he explains because the koach of the Satan is a koach of heder. It's a koach of loss. It's a koach of weakness. And Shalom is the greatest expression of strength. Shalom is shalem. It's the whole, completeness. We say Shalom, the bracha of Shalom is always the concluding bracha, the completion, the bracha of completion at the end of the Shemoneh Esrei. Right? When something is complete, so it's not shayach to, it's not subject to the misa, to the separation. It's there, it's where the Satan touches that the misa is possible. It's where you have this sort of breakup, this decomposition, and that's indeed where it is to exist. So we're not going to go into this at length. But I would just point out to you an interesting thing for to expand upon in your own mind, or some or some other time, which is that when we speak about the Satan's the Malach HaMoves, we speak about heder, about loss, about absence. It's always defined in terms of a breakup. When we speak about death as a natural phenomenon, death as a natural phenomenon is ha-guf. The body goes back to the earth where it came from. The soul goes back to the heavens from where it came from. There's a separation of the two elements that were put together. Right? They break up. That's death. Right? Hashem took the dust, molded it together to make a body, and then Hashem is geyser, and he says, and will break back up again into the dust. It's always going to be together in that way, a separation of elements. What's fascinating is that there was a person whose name was Kairach. Kairach is known as the consummate Baal Machlokes, right? Machlokes, Ezu Machlokes, Shalei L'Shem Shamayim. What's an argument not for the sake of heaven, which results in a breakup, is Kairach V'Hadasai. The name itself, right? Kairach is a split, right? Is a split, is something, torn apart. Right? Kairach is the quintessential machlaikas. He's the antagonist of Aroin, who is Ayev Sholem V'Raydev Sholem. What was the punishment of Kairach? The punishment of Kairach was that he was Yared Chayim Sha'ela. That's the way the Pasuk accents. He didn't die a natural death. He didn't just decompose, deteriorate, separate, break up into pieces. Hashem plunked him down into the earth alive. We have Chayim Shaila completely. We don't have this description of the parts just breaking up and separating into their own place, the body breaking apart and decomposing. No. Chayim Shaila, he went down with his neshama, with his guf, all together. There wasn't this notion of deterioration. It was a dramatic death, a sudden death, like you have as well. What was the prototype for the death of Cain and Hevel, even though it wasn't nearly as dramatic the way the Pasuk describes it, of Korach was Cain and Hevel. Right? Cain and Hevel, the Gemara says that the earth opened up its mouth to swallow up the blood of Hevel, the Pasuk says, right? Or Asher Patsas Piel Akachas Esmei Achicha. So the Gemara says that the next time it opened up its mouth was to open up, to swallow Korach. And in many sources it says, right, beyond the scholar discussion, but that Korach was Cain, was a Gilgul of Cain, and Moshe Rabbeinu was Hevel. So the idea is that these are examples of, right, the unnatural death. You're taking something which is supposed to be together, and you're breaking it apart. Right? In other words, it's not supposed to be. Right? The picture of death in its conventional sense is, okay, you know, it sort of naturally comes apart because it was sort of unnatural that it came together. So it naturally comes apart. The two instances that we have here where it doesn't naturally come apart are both Balei Machlokes, Cain and Hevel, two brothers who should have been together, but instead what did they do? They broke them. They made a wedge between them. Cain went and disputed with his brother, and argued with his brother, and killed his brother. Korach went and split from Klal Yisrael. So, you know, made a machlokes in Klal Yisrael. That is something which, in a certain sense, you might say, okay, so that should lead to the most natural death. What we're saying here is that shalom, the notion of achva v'shalom, is so natural, is really the natural condition. The Klal Yisrael is supposed to be naturally together. And when they are naturally together, and they maintain that natural togetherness, so then the Satan, who will come with a sledgehammer to break things and to destroy, has no shlita, has no ability. Right? There's no unnatural decomposition. There's no breakup that will come when we're together. The more something is whole, the less vulnerable it is, the less subject it is to anything else.
You weren't shalom, so we're going to make you shalom?
No, the idea is that Korach was creating a condition of machlokes in Kol Yisrael, which is unnatural. In the ultimate truth, of course, you know, the separation from the guf from the neshama is also supposed to be unnatural. They were supposed to have been fused together. Klal Yisrael is supposed to be together as one. Korach, one can view machlokes as being the most natural condition. Right? You look out for number one. Everybody goes for themselves. In the ways of the nations of the world, as Aaron said, Moshe said to Korach, they have 250 churches and 250 methods of service. Right? Machlokes can be seen as something which is natural. Cain and Hevel, right, their divisions could be seen as something which is natural. But we go against that. We say, no, what you're doing here is really you're taking something which is a whole and you're breaking it. You're breaking it. You're destroying it. It's not something which just naturally comes apart. So we don't allow him the luxury of a death which implies separate things that came together and naturally come apart. No, his is death by sledgehammer. His is death, unnatural. You have to take an integral unit and break it. That's the zelul mazeh by Korach, one could say. But the idea here again is that this notion of that which is the satan, the malchamavs, of breaking up, of things coming apart, that's in a world of heder. It's in a world of ishlemus. It's in a world of a lack of completion, of a lack of togetherness. In the world of togetherness, in the world of shalom, that doesn't happen. Okay. The second point that he says is the one which we sort of alluded to in our introductory remarks. Baruch atah Adonai Eloheinu Melech haolam shehakol nehyeh bidvarei. is that galus in itself, part of the definition of galus is pizur, is scattering. And if we are divided amongst ourselves to the extent that we control it in the galus, if we split and we create all these different groups and divisions within the Jewish people, so what we're doing is we are making the galus more than it needs to be. Galus, yeah, to some degree we're condemned to dispersion and separation, but to some degree we're not. To a great degree, the extent of the separation and the dispersion is in our hands. So we complain about the bitter galus. We have to do that which is in our hands to remediate it. And the way we remediate it is by, to whatever degree, coming together and being misachid. And to this, the Maral brings something which he explained earlier in the Sefer, a beautiful Mamar Chazal, the Gemara in Brachas. The Gemara says, Kol Isik B'Toyra Uvimilus Chasadim Umispal Limatzibur Mala Olav Akosav Kilpa the Ani Lilu Livni Mibein HaUmais. Person who's Isik in Toyra and Chesed and davens together with the Tzibur, it's as if he redeemed me and my children from his exile amongst the nations. So, you know, on the one hand you would say, so this is Torah, Avodah, and Gemilus Chasadim, right? The three pillars upon which the world rests. But there's an emphasis in the Gemara on Mispalel Im HaTzibur. And the Maral says that the idea is because when the person identifies themselves together with the Tzibur of Klal Yisrael, to some degree they are indeed taking away that element of Golus. The element of Golus, which is that condition of Golus, which is dispersion, that is something which the person is trying to climb the hill, you know, to get over it, get past it. He's trying to be ma'achid the tzibur. Being ma'achid the tzibur, unifying a community, is indeed a redemption from Golus itself. Okay. Now, the third point which he says in this, which is again, it's just more of the same in a certain sense, but there's a significant and a subtle difference, is the one which perhaps I think I shouldn't say the one which we have to. Everyone, right? The second point also very, very much is one which we you know can recognize significantly, as by bonding ourselves to ourselves, we're solving part of the desperation of Golos. However, this third point which he makes is like this, is that something which is going to be considered significant, which is going to be whole to itself, is not just that it's going to be less vulnerable, but that it naturally is going to stand alone. Something which has its own internal cohesion will naturally, to some degree, exist by itself. And part of the Golus condition is going to be the danger of Klal Yisrael becoming lost amongst the nation within which it exists. So the idea, the shalom, the bonds which Jews create amongst each other, and the identification with each other as an ummah, as a people, together, that is a great bulwark, a great protection against the Jewish people falling apart and being swallowed up within the Golus. Let's explain a little bit more. In this context, the Maral brings, of course, the famous Chazal, which we say part of it, in the Haggadah Shel Pesach, when the Jewish people went down to Mitzrayim, it says Vahisham Lugoy, and they became there as a nation. Vahisham Lugoy. So he says, Melamed Shehayu Yisrael Mitzuyanim Sham. This teaches you that the Bnei Yisrael were Mitzuyanim. They were distinct there in Mitzrayim from the Umay Sa'ilam, from the rest of the world. That was the strength of Vahisham Lugoy. We became there as a people. And there's an irony in that, because you know, HaKadosh Baruch Hu told Avram, go to Eretz Yisrael, ki l'goy gadol asim chasham, right? V'escha l'goy gadol, excuse me. But here, you go to Eretz Yisrael, and there I will make you into a great nation. But in a certain sense, there's a contrast to that, which is that HaKadosh Baruch Hu says in Mitzrayim, there's also, go down to Mitzrayim, ki l'goy gadol asim chasham, I'm going to make you into a great nation there. And the Bnei Yisrael, their survival mechanism in Mitzrayim to a certain degree was Mitzuyanim, to be distinct. They couldn't afford to be assimilated or to be absorbed amongst the Umay Sa'ilam. They couldn't afford to allow their identity to be completely overtaken by that of the Umay Sa'ilam. So what do they do? What are the famous aspects of Mitzuyanim? Leishinu Shemam, Leshainam, Malbusham. They didn't change their names, they didn't change their language, they didn't change their clothing. They remained culturally distinct. They had to do that in order to be able to maintain themselves and be apart from the Umay Sa'ilam. So there was a cultural identification with other Jews. They had to somehow identify themselves with other Eden in order to be able to maintain themselves. And the Maharal brings another maimer, another part of one of the Mamorei Chazal about this. And this is profound. There's some question about exactly where this Mamor Chazal is found, but he brings really two separate Mamorei Chazal that he seems to understand in a similar way. And this is the point which he made in the last perek that I wanted to cover. Last week we didn't get up to it, but this is where he covers it again in this perek. And this, that is, there's one Chazal which says that besides for Leshinu as Shemam and Leshainam, they didn't change their names and their language, but it says as well that they weren't Prutzim Bo'arayas. They didn't break the moral taboos, and Lehoyabem Lashon Hara. They didn't have Lashon Hara amongst them. On the other hand, the other Chazal says, Lagilu Mastayrin Shalahem. They did not reveal their secrets. And here, the Maharal has an idea, which is a very simple idea and a very magnificent idea. The idea takes its first expression in the last parak in Perek Chof Dalet, where the Gemara says, remember we learned last week about the three oaths, the Shalosh Shvuos that HaKadosh Baruch Hu brought upon Klal Yisrael in the Golos. And then there's a second opinion in the Gemara that says, no, there are actually six Shvuos. There are actually six oaths that the Bnei Yisrael were made to take. Now the three oaths, those were fairly, you know, straightforward, familiar, Golos type of oaths, right, that the Bnei Yisrael shouldn't try to storm Eretz Yisrael, that they shouldn't rebel against the Umayyads, that the Umayyads shouldn't overwhelm them with the Sheba that would be too strong. But the other three oaths are really about the Geula. They are about the Ketz. So what were the three oaths that were there? One was Shaloi Yigalu Es HaKetz, they shouldn't reveal it. One was Shaloi Yidchaku Es HaKetz. And the third one is they should not reveal their secrets to the nations of the world. And the Maharal explains in that idea, we're just going to dwell on that idea, is that there's something called a pact that exists amongst people who trust, who have a trust with each other. If I have a relationship with somebody, and the person comes and they talk to me and they confide in me, and then I divulge, I break my confidentiality that I existed with that person, the person feels like the whole relationship with me is destroyed. I thought that when we shared privately. Instead, look, what's between us is not really between us. You share it with others. There goes the wholeness and the meaning of the relationship, the strength of the relationship. Klal Yisrael has to have a certain madrega, a certain level of side, of that which is their private pact, their secret, in order for Klal Yisrael to stay, to maintain themselves, to maintain ourselves amongst the nations of the world. There's a certain club mentality, a certain private mentality that necessarily exists, that bonds us together. Yes, might sound, you know, small-minded, trivial, but to some degree there has to be a certain shared value that's not out there for everybody else that indeed holds us together. Lo yigalu sodeisein l'umay sa'ilam. They can't reveal their secrets to the nations of the world. You know, the Gemara says, k'sav l'chas advar me'el ki al pi advar me'el karati itcha bris ve'es Yisrael. Based on these words, I am making a covenant with you. So the Gemara says there's two things that are alluded to in this pasuk: writing the Torah and telling the Torah. Writing the Torah is not the covenant. Al pi advarim ela, telling the Torah, that's the covenant. Why? Because the written Torah is, by nature of the fact that it's written, it's not a secret anymore. Somebody can come, steal the document, and they're able to read it. But when you're dealing with Torah Shebaal Peh, when you're dealing with an oral tradition, that is the bris with Kol Yisrael. Because that's exclusive. That's exclusive. Nobody else can have that. It's given over generation to generation. Part of the preservation of the internal strength of the Jewish people is their private connection to Torah. That's part of the Sod Shabo. Yeah?
All what was going on, Sukkot asked me, what's that hat for? How much one can tell them?
So it's clear in the Torah that that there's such a thing as bedafka the goyim seeing the Torah. The Gemara says, the pasuk says, u'shmartem va'asisem ki chachmaschem uvinaschem la'enei ha'amim. You observe the Torah, the goyim will admire and say how wise and understanding it is. So on the one hand, you're not supposed to see them, teach them Torah. On the other hand, they're supposed to be able to observe the Torah from a distance and be able to see it. So limud ha'Torah is to go and teach the intricacies. It doesn't mean that now the person, where you're just allowing the person a superficial understanding of what it is that they're seeing. You know, you go on an airplane and somebody sees your tzitzis. You know, I say, what are those strings? So you're going to start telling them, you know, all the intricacies, the details. You know, these, we wear these strings. It's a distinctive Jewish garb, and it's supposed to remind us of our obligations as Jews. So, you know, that's not lifnai v'lifnim. That's not letting them into the inner sanctum of Torah. That's, you know, now I know what I see. Instead of thinking that these guys are you know, a bunch of crazies and Judaism has a lot of strings attached, right? Instead, they know, they learn, right, the fringe benefits, right? So they, I'm sorry, they see that there's a wisdom here. They see that there's something, you know, that can be admired, huh?
Your string is along.
So those things fit by Golas Mitzrayim, but you see that all three of those things, and even being Megala in some way at the Torah, but after the Golas Rishon, and then by the Bayis Sheni, all of that's changed.
All of that changed. So it's a very interesting issue that you're raising, and it's you know, we don't have the same thing, right? Many, many, many people have non-Jewish names, right? So, you know, Ramesha has a tshuva about this. Ramesha posits a very interesting thesis. He says, I'm hesitant to say it. And he starts talking primarily about non-Jewish names that found their way into the Jewish, you know, into the Jewish world, that became, you know, people had them, you know, Yiddish names or non-Jewish names that still had their place, but he has the following thesis, which he suggests, which is that the Bnei Yisrael in Mitzrayim didn't have the Torah, so that which they would have to separate themselves from the Mitzrayim was cultural. They needed the protection of Shmom Lashayna Malbusham. It says, now is there a lack of things that are separating Yisrael from Yumay Sailam? When we have all the mitzvahs, right, we can't eat their food, right? We can't. There are so many things that we do distinctively. So the investment in Shmom L'Shoyna Malbusham as the protection is less. He says, I'm hesitant to say it, but you know that's to some degree what he says.
Rav Huttner, huh? Even so, the Torah. I mean, the fact that the Gemara, in a sense, is written in Lashon Aramis, which was the language of everybody else at the time.
Wasn't exactly. It would be like if you wrote a sefer in Yiddish and say that it was the language of everybody else, of the Germans. It wasn't the language of everybody else. It was a dialect. Right? Aramis, you know, Talmudic Aramaic is a dialect. And it's very Jewish. It's very Jewish, I think. I mean, I'm not a scholar in this area, but
so,
midrashically, yes, but the fundamental thing is that we did teach Torah in that language because it was the language of the Amei HaAretz, Right? So Aramis is the cut above other languages. Chazal teach us things like that about Aramis. Right? But it was fundamentally the vernacular, the common language. However, it was still, you know, it was English, you know, it was a Jewish version of the same thing. Not so simply. But even that, yes, in any of the writing of the Torah Shebaal Peh, we run into that problem. Any writing of the Torah Shebaal Peh lowers the quality of the bris, opens it up to the Umos HaOlam. It's a different story. I think it's a big decision to decide to have Random House publish the Gemara. It's a big decision. Because on the one hand you might say, you know, here this way, people who don't go to Shopsies, you know, to buy art scroll books will be able to access it. You know, Jews who buy Random House, who shop Barnes & Noble, will be able to access it. I think Barnes & Noble carries art scroll already. But it opens up a new realm. But on the other hand, its primary market is the world as a whole. You know, what happens to the preservation of the Torah Shebaal Peh? It's a tricky question. I'm not here to slam anything.
They published an article for that matter. I mean, that's open.
Anyway,
100%. It opens it up. It opens it up to everybody, and there is a cost in that.
Even a Yid. I had a Yid once say that I bought one of the Random House ones. I couldn't put it down. I had to stay up the whole night to finish.
Transition of Torah Shebaal Peh, Chazal sees it as a big goal, a big eternal world. We see one of the big things that would be fascinating was the
Torah Shebaal Peh. Translation of the Torah Shebaal Peh, yeah.
Even according to this Peshat Torah Shebaal Peh, there was no big deal of going knowing it.
Well, yes and no. You know, yes and no. It's not simple because implicit in the translation itself was some level of Mesira of that Torah Shebaal Peh. It's a complicated sugya, and you have it. I mean, the problem you could ask is even more fundamentally. It says Moshe Rabbeinu wrote down the Torah Bar Hetev. He translated the Torah into 70 languages. Translation of the Torah is nothing new. Not just that it's spect, it's nothing new. So the context over there of the Umay Sa'ilam translating was them trying to take possession of it. And we had to translate it for them. We had to compromise in the translation of the Torah a little bit, you know, as in the changes which are listed in the Gemara, but it's not coming to begin with to the compromises which are there when it comes to the realm of the Torah Shebaal Peh Hadvar Ma'ila. So there's something called this pact of staying together and being able to do it, and it's a very, very big deal, a very, very big deal of this notion of the keeping of a secret, of the maintenance of confidentiality. Sometimes it's not so much the issue of what was said and what wasn't said, but it has to do with just the general nature of what it says about the relationship as it exists. You know, when your club has a secret password, it could be that there's really nothing very, very significant that's being transferred in that, but it just simplifies, you know, it just, you know, implies and says a certain connection which is therefore going to be implicit by virtue of the privacy of the pact. And that's a very big deal. And in Hoilchei Rochel, really, in Lashon Hara, he does, to some degree, translate the same way. A gossip monger, you know, he speaks to one person over here, and he goes and he shares the information elsewhere. There's this constant cycle of betrayal, of the inability to create a relationship. And here is a very, very big strength. A very, very big strength that Klal Yisrael wants to be keeping itself with when you're dealing with Yisrael amongst the Umay Sa'ilam. The tremendous halachic and visceral reaction which exists towards the notion of Mesira, of giving a Jew over to the authorities, right, which is a tremendous, tremendous issue. I mean, Mesira has such a fascinating and strong halachic tradition about how Klal Yisrael reacted to it. I mean, there were communities where the Meiser, they would follow him, they would make sure to go with him to the mikvah on Erev Yom Kippur, and they would keep his head underwater. They would drown them on Erev Yom Kippur, wow, in the mikvah, right? I mean, it was such a considered to be such a redifa and such a betrayal. Now, you know, sometimes you know, there are not just heterim, but mandates, you know, of Mesira under certain circumstances where we simply are not going to be able to take care of it internally. However, when in cases where that's not the situation, it's considered just a fundamental betrayal of Jewish brotherhood, a fundamental betrayal of Jewish brotherhood that is remarkable.
It's done on the left wing. On the left wing is
done. The right wing is always.
You know, you should know that there's a history of that which is from not from people. There were times when you know, Rav Yosef Chaim Zonnenfeld went to the British against the Jewish agency. You know, they felt it was pikuach nefashos that these people were representing the Jews in a certain way, and they want to represent them differently. So, but yes, there certainly is a mentality which exists, which Rav Yosef Chaim Zonnenfeld Bechlal didn't have, right? But there's a mentality which exists where somebody will be sort of trying to say, oh, no, I'm not part of them, right? You know, and, you know, cozy up to the other side and point the finger instead at their fellow Jews. So besides for the specific damage of the specific action, it betrays a complete dissolution of Jewish community. I was once involved in a case, and I'll try to keep the details vague so it can't be figured out, but I was involved once in a case where a Jew had reported another Jew, or a Jew had reported another Jew to a professional, you know, like a board of standards. A professional board of standards. He had reported the other Jew for failure in fulfilling the thing in that board of standards. And it was not a simple situation. Arguably, it was a case of pikuach nefashos. In the end, the Jew who was reported brought a grievance against the Jew who reported him, you know, within the community. And it turned out that there was a Jew who was very involved on the board, on the professional board, and he spoke to the rabbis who were involved in reviewing the grievance, and he said, again, remember, this is a person who professionally was involved in maintaining standards for the industry, for the trade, right? And he said the first thing he thought when this grievance crossed his desk was, why are they bringing it to the board? Why aren't they doing it internally? Okay, this is not like a Haredi person, you know. It's just, you know, there's understanding. You know, you're two Jews. You're part of the same community. Like, you know, what does that say about community? Now, again, I say this with hesitation because sometimes, you know, one must take that step when it's irresolvable within a community. But there's something which is so fundamental about that element of identification. And as soon as Klal Yisrael would start turning their backs on each other, that's why he understands the idea of Arayas. They weren't Prutzim Barayas. He says the idea of Prutzim Barayas wasn't what they were worried about was Eishes Ish. Prutzim Barayas was with the nations. You know, that big question where we find that only Shlomis Bas Divri, only one Jewish woman who was together with the Mitzrim, because there's something which is an elemental expression of community. That's why we have a similarly visceral reaction to intermarriage, right? Because it's, again, it's like this, my gosh, you know, what do we have left of our Jewish family? You know, stick together. It's like it's abandoning the ship. It's completely losing one's bearings and going out that way.
Don't try and turn around, though, this issue of so this pact that we have, I mean, this Protocols of Other Design we saw last week. You have the Talmud and you have the secret brotherhood and blah, 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 and make a whole.
Good.
They turn it upside down in their head against us.
But there was one. The whole world is open. There's nothing. There's no, like, there's no snares. There's nothing, like, hidden. Everything's, like, open. So if someone says, like, it's like, that's wrong, you know? Like, you're wrong if you have, like, if you're snares, you have something that's not revealed. I mean, everything's open book. That's right. Like,
But if the nations are saying, oh boy, you know, look, it's they have these, you know, protocols, you know, and who knows what else, you know, this secret cabal, you know, that the, you know, that does all of these things. So, okay, so, you know, Klal Yisrael might have to not act like, you know, secretive, shrewd schemers and planners, but still to act with a sort of brotherhood where betrayal, you understand, is just corrosive to Jewish identity, to identifying the person themselves as a Jew. You know, we have, you know, when people like to sometimes cast aspersions on elements of the Jewish community, that's very focused on Tikkun Olam. Now, in a certain sense, it's a wrong thing to cast aspersions on focus on Tikkun Olam. It is a Jewish responsibility, absolute Jewish responsibility, to make sure that the world, if possible, is a better place. Where is the rub? Where is the problem? That sometimes the focus on fixing the world is an exclusive focus, where you're just focused on making sure that the world is a better place, but to one's fellow Jew, you could let them go to who knows where in a handbasket.
Because they forget the next two words.
Huh?
They forget the next two words.
Well, not necessarily. You know, even those who would have, I mean, the great philosophers, you say they're forgetting B'malchus Shakai, in the kingdom of Hashem. So yeah, there are some people who are not going to be religious, but even the theologians of it, who were, you know, many of the more serious theologians. But there was a belief in trying to fix the world and making the world a better place, and dissolving the sense of an Am of Klal Yisrael. And that's really the opposite of the direction which we're supposed to go. As Klal Yisrael, we're supposed to be visible to the nations of the world and make a difference in that way to nations of the world, whether actively or just by example. And that's the failure. The failure is when the sense of brotherhood is eroded by a desire to help the world. A person who wants to help the entire Jewish community and neglects their own family, forget it, right? It's no good. That's not right. The person has to want to help their family, and on top of that, build upon that and be able to help as well beyond. But without that, if the person's missing the first element, forget about it. They're losing the basic, you know, the basic quality of what creates a pact. Yeah.
I think it's hashgacha that we're having this discussion, and that this is the first time my son has happened with that disgusting behemoth that they released from prison, made the comment that he wishes, you know, the Ishmaelis had such brotherhood to give over so much for just dead bodies as the hidden. Like, that was one of the most powerful statements I've ever heard. Like, from someone who, like, there's no shaykhus to this, but he saw the beauty of the brotherhood of the Jewish people. I was blown away. I wonder if it's even true. Like, I pondered it so bizarre that he could see such a thing, to be a murderer would see such a thing. It's an incredible thing. I assume that's what we're talking about, the way Yin cares for another Yid and does anything for another Yid.
Absolutely. 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 Now the Maral here says a beautiful, beautiful vort, just a vort which is worthy. Let me just say one thing before. He says, you know, he teaches that's part of the notion of yayin, of wine, as the ultimate tool of assimilation. You know, Chazal, they were geyser, amongst the things they were geyser primarily is wine. Yeinam shel akum, yeinam mishum neisem. Why? You know, the Gemara famously says, Yayin is the same gematria as sod, a secret. They're both gematria 70. Nichnas yayin yotza sod. Wine goes in. Sometimes the secret comes. Secrets come out. You become less discreet. But the idea is, and Maral explains, the Gemara really says it in yayin and sod as well, that wine is hidden there in the deep recesses of the grape. It has to be squeezed out. It's brought out from the grape, and therefore represents that which is inside. So, and we share our secrets amongst ourselves. We don't keep secrets from each other, right? We share amongst each other. That's the expression of Jewish togetherness. And when you break that down and you share with Ummah Sa'ilam, then you lose that distinctiveness. So again, number one, when Klal Yisrael strays together as one, so then we're like something of a whole unit. and therefore we're less subject to be broken. When Klal Yisrael stays together, so then we are doing what is in our hands to counter what would have been the effects of the Golos, which is dispersion and separating us. And when Klal Yisrael stays together, Klal Yisrael remains Klal Yisrael. Right? The pact of togetherness is so fundamental to just maintaining who we are. And the Maharal says a beautiful vort. Beautiful vort. He says Klal Yisrael is compared very, very much. It's a famous vort. I'm sure some of you have heard it before from the Maharal. It says Klal Yisrael is compared to Eish. Right? Mi minay Eish das lamay. The Gemara says, Hoseim shel elu Eish. Right? The rules of the Jewish people, the law, the faith, the practice of the Jewish people is fire. The nations of the world are compared to Mayim. Right? It says Mayim Rabim lo yichlu lechabes es ava. A lot of water cannot extinguish the ava, the love which HaKadosh Baruch Hu feels for us. Right, so we say that's referring to the Goyim. Hatzileini mayim rabim miyad b'nei nechor. Explicit pasuk in Tehillim. Save me from the hands of, from great waters, from the hands of the nations. They're compared to mayim rabim. So you have fire and water. What happens when you put together fire and water? So the water will douse the fire. However, if you don't quite put together the fire and the water, if let's say you have a fire over here and a puddle over there, or you have a fire over here and a pot and water inside the pot, what happens? Then the fire burns up the water, cooks up the water, affects the water. Instead of the water dousing the fire, says the Maharal, Pashut, beautiful. He says, when the fire and the water mix, when Yisrael and Yumas Island mix, there's a clear winner, and that's the water. But when we are able to maintain our distinctiveness, we say we're to keep ourselves separate from the water and interact with the nations of the world, with the water, as a separate and distinct entity, then we prevail. Then Klal Yisrael prevails. Then Klal Yisrael indeed successfully overcomes.
Is that a strength for a weakness? Is that a strength for a weakness?
That once we come together, we lose
right,
it?
So that when you put, you know, all peoples together, Klal Yisrael, basically what we're saying is they assimilate, right? They lose all that they have.
They lose their identity. Yeah.
And when you keep them...
It sounds like Tikkun Olam, like the true Tikkun Olam. We can warm them and they can gain from our fire.
The true Tikkun Olam is, so yes, Klal Yisrael is singly. So you say, does that mean that there's a weakness of Klal Yisrael that they don't... Part of Klal Yisrael is identifying as Klal Yisrael. It doesn't begin without a proper and real and meaningful sense of identity. It doesn't begin without a proper and meaningful sense of identity. Anybody's looking for something to read, I highly recommend, you're talking about one of these days, the Sharansky's new book. Critical. You know, Sharansky wrote this famous book that was the darling of the whole right wing about democracy, defense of democracy. He has a new, in the case for democracy, he has a new book called Defending Identity, which is about national pride and national connection and why it's not a stira. Very valuable. Very, very valuable. Very important.
Do you recommend the other book about the democracy?
But it's also valuable. It's also valuable, but it's not nearly as valuable to a Jew as this is. This book is valuable for a Jew to read.
Is he from now?
He's from. He's always been from. He's not typical. Not even yeshiva. He's not typical. It's not typical. But he survives on Yerushalayim Yerucha.
Are all of his books worth reading? Are they valuable?
He only has three books. The first book. Unbelievable.
Okay.
His biography is unbelievable. Okay. Unbelievable.
His wife is really
good.
I thought that's when they broke up. Yeah. She wanted to be broken.
They're not broken up.
No.
They're married. They're happily married. Huh? They're not broken up. They're very happy married. Very happy married. People make people say it's a grist for the mill. They're a little worried and so on. But she's visibly thrown. And he doesn't wear a yarmulke. He doesn't wear a yarmulke, but he has a very calculated in many, many things which he does and exactly how he does them, why he does them. But you don't have to agree with everything that he. I don't agree with everything he does, but I think he's a great person. he's mamash a great person. But the notion which he speaks about of that, you know, that you're basically you can't just, you know, dissolve into it, into but Achdus Yisrael, it's such a sign of it, of brotherhood. You know, I took a couple of years ago, I took a busload. It wasn't a busload, actually. It was a couple. Ended up being just a couple of vanloads to the rally for Darfur. I felt that there was a, you know, that there was a, you know, you again, you can't expect the world to bomb the railroad tracks to Auschwitz when it's us. If you don't ask them to do anything when it's somebody else, it's not right. It's not strategic. But more fundamentally, it's just not right. You know, you're not supposed to stand by. You're not supposed to stand by while evil is being perpetrated. And it was a very Jewish event. It was a very, very, very Jewish event. It was all run, you know, created by Jews, run by Jews, and so on and so forth. But the thing what was painful about it is that people could be much, much more animated about the Darfurians than about the Jews because of self-consciousness, because they're too busy fixing the world to feel that they're supposed to be a special bond to somebody's brother. And you know, it's not like the Chazal conceded to us and said, you know, really you should be helping everybody, but we're going to let you help your family before you help everybody else. Farkert. A person has a chiyuv to help their family before everybody else. A person's supposed to help other people too, right? Don't be wrong. But it's not like, oh, nepotism. You know, you're giving your charity to your own family. You have a chiyuv. You have a chiyuv. There's a bond. There's a pact. You have to build that. That's before everything else. I think it's a good pshat. And with this we'll conclude. You know, I shared once in the Shad, it says that when Yosef's family came down to Mitzrayim, so the Egyptians were very happy. They were very happy. Yosef's family came down to Mitzrayim. What's the Shad? Why were the Mitzrayim so happy that they came down to Mitzrayim? So Rashi brings that idea was that they saw that he was not, you know, he was until then he was an Eved. Now they saw that he was from good stock. It's a little missing from the Pasuk. But the thing is like this. Would you find it a little unnerving, a little bit unnerving, to have your entire country run and controlled by an outside consultant, you know, by like a carpetbagger? You know, he comes in here, he comes, but no, yeah. Right? What I read your lips.
Isn't it also to build an Obama in your backyard?
So it was unnerving. Here, all of Mitzrayim was completely being, you know, their whole fate was delivered into the hands of this person, who was an excellent, you know, manager who was going to be, who's taking care of all Mitzrayim, the plan, you know, the Joseph plan. We're going to save. We're going to manage. We're going to control everything else. Unnerving. No, he's here, he's gone. When Yosef's family came to Mitzrayim and he was drawn into a familial context, now it's normal. Now, okay, fine. Finally, we see he has family. He's normal. He's worrying about them. He's, you know, he's crying over them. He's connected to them. There was a sense, now we have him. You know, now he's a person. He's a person amongst us. There's that sense of connection can't dissolve in the face of anything else. And it's a big temptation that sometimes we have. And it's not only secular Jews that have this temptation. And sometimes we also might, you know, like take a step back. You know, there's other Jews maybe who are very visibly Jewish and aren't doing things exactly the way we'd like. And we'll talk to others and sometimes maybe distance ourselves from them in some way. Not simple. It's not simple. One of the greatest things that we have to nurture is our absolute sense of brotherhood to Jews. That's one of the greatest survival mechanisms of Klal Yisrael and the Golos. And that's the shalom that is essential to going forward.
So that's how you get the answer.
Yeah. Kamtza bar kamtza. You know, see what happened? Right? A Jew turned against another Jew internally, and then the Jew goes and he goes to the Romans. You know,
I deal with this in religion. I deal with all the stops. Jews against Jews. Some people become more religious and they'll